And we have with us in the studios, once again, Joff Parrish and Maria Tomchick, co-editors at Eat the State. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we did bring our evidence this week.
Right. I see you have some photos and some slides with you there.
Yeah, the PowerPoint presentation probably won't do much good on the radio, but we'll do our best.
So we're of course
it'll make us feel better.
Yeah,
little
exactly.
Hints about Colin Powell's
and believe me, it'll be all about power.
Giving hints, of course, about Colin Powell's presentation to the UN, which we'll be getting to a little later in the half hour, as well as the British dossier that came out on Monday.
Yes, Colin Powell, the demolition.
I wanted to mention something and see if you guys heard it or to check if any of our listeners heard this really quick. Somebody approached me in the last 24 hours saying that they had been watching CNN news yesterday morning about 7 o'clock, and they had an announcement right at the top of the hour when they're switching over the news heads.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And alerting people to the moving of the threat level up to orange.
Yes.
Which we all heard
yes.
about.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And this person that was doing the announcement said the reason they were doing that was because of increased peace activist things happening here in the U.S., as well as hostile coverage on shows like Oprah, kind of against the
I had not heard that. No.
I hadn't heard that either.
And they kept watching after the commercial to see if there was going to be more on that. And then the other heads came in and totally didn't mention anything about that. So I thought that was just shocking.
I have heard quite a bit, both in law enforcement circles and in anti-terrorism circles, considering the anti-war movement as a source of potential domestic terrorism.
Right.
But I hadn't. Yeah, exactly. But well, no, and actually, law enforcement officials, you know, treating it as such, as a terrorist threat, but I had in their internal documents, but no, I had not heard that yesterday.
So if anybody did hear that, they should give us a call at the station, 520-5838. We got a ton to cover this week, and one of the biggest things of the week happened at the end of the week, which, Job, you were calling the Police State Enhancement Act?
Yeah. this actually, to give the Petroleum Broadcast System some credit, they have been running Bill Moyers now for the last, oh, I guess, 6 or 8 months or so, and he has had some of the most astonishing and radical things on over the past few months that I've ever seen on pre-PBS, so Friday night, 9 p.m., it is worth checking out, and I do not recommend TV programs often. But one of the things he had on last night, and it's been coming out in some other areas, very closely held secret at the Justice Department, has been the draft of the follow-up, the sequel, if you will, the Jason version of the USA Patriot Act. The Patriot Act, as you'll recall, was passed very quickly after 9/11, quite a bit on it, had been on the shelf in some cases since the 1950s. And so, you know, John Ashcroft and the fevered minds working for him have had all these months to figure out ways to improve and embellish it and the sort of ethos behind it. And it is coming out. They have been refusing to make any portions of it public or even show it to the relevant congressional committees because, of course, you know, it might tip off terrorists as to the vulnerabilities in the domestic security apparatus of the United States. but we have learned what is in it now. In fact, it is on the web. PBS posted it on their website. If you go to pbs.org, follow the link to Bill Moyers now. As of late last night, was still the lead story up there. And the agency in D.C. that it was actually leaked to is called the Center for Public Interest. And if you did a Google, if it's not up at PBS, I'm sure you could find it through there. It is actually called the Domestic Security Enhancement Act of 2003. And I have to admit, I may be a little punchy today because I was up until about 4:15 this morning reading this sucker. It's about 120 pages of the most frightening stuff you would ever want to imagine. And we don't have time to really go into a lot of detail on it now. I would encourage people to check it out to give you an idea of some of the things that it includes. It enables the United States to declare any individual a foreign power that can be declared war against. In other words, the Bush administration has already retained the possibility of calling terrorist groups foreign powers that it could declare war against. But this closes the loophole of individual operatives that might not be affiliated with a terrorist group, and so they now, too, can be declared war against. It also contains an interesting provision saying that any individual who might be gathering intelligence that could be used by a foreign government can now be prosecuted, you know, as such, as a presumably a foreign hostile power, even if that activity is legal and breaks no criminal laws or other criminal laws. So, for example, if you went on the internet and downloaded a copy of this report that the Bush administration didn't want you to have, you could be, maybe charged as an enemy unlawful combatant and thrown in jail without trial forever and ever and ever. It is, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff which basically boils down, most of which involves vastly expanded police powers, vastly enhanced surveillance powers, and is very much based on the precedents that the Bush administration has been laying over the last year of retaining the right to charge people under the rules of law that are then funneled into the military court system rather than into the portion of the civilian court system that is actually covered by, you know, the Bill of Rights, due process, the Constitution, trivially things like that.
Ancient history.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we got 100 years war we got to fight here, and you know, maybe sometime in the 23rd or 24th centuries we'll reinstitute our founding fathers' vision, but let's face it, you know, we really just don't have time for that right now. So it's very, very frightening stuff. And, you know, if you combine that with not only the atmosphere that will be the political sense in the United States, in all probability, if the United States goes to war with Iraq or invades Iraq or obliterates Iraq, but also the very real likelihood, and in fact, I think the very probable likelihood, that there will be future major terrorist acts on American soil as a result of an invasion of Iraq because of all the anger and outrage that it will generate around the world. As soon as you have any one particular domestic terrorist act within the United States, and if you have this in place with a Republican-controlled Congress, both House of Representatives and Senate, what you have then is not only the legal authority to do everything up to and including the executions on the president's word that are now possible under military tribunals, you basically can do everything Stalin did during his purges with the legal authority that the Bush administration is claiming for itself. The only thing that you do not have is the political will and the the precedent of pulling it off. It's very, very frightening times. It really is. And I would really encourage people to go read this, download it. It's a PDF file. Share it. Get it out there.
Of course, now it's been repackaged with a really nice red, white, and blue.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. So www.pbs.org, the Domestic Security Enhancement Act of 2003. Read it and weep.
Well, that happened at the end of the week, and then jumping back to the beginning of the week, Monday, we had the British came out with a dossier.
Yeah, speaking of things you're not supposed to read.
And the U.S. and the Brits like to kind of do a tag team on evidence and
well, not only tag team, but the Bush administration has been very, very reluctant over the last 6 or 8 months, and we'll get into this in great detail with good old our buddy Coleman, to release the evidence that it says it has, that the country of Iraq poses a threat to the security of the United States. What has often happened over the last 6 months is that Tony Blair's government in the United Kingdom has been the lesser coalition partner that has publicly published the actual evidence that the Bush administration claims that it's that stuff that represents our concerns. And three times now the Blair government has put out reports on the threat that Iraq has published, and each time those reports have been roundly criticized, and the criticism has been harsher each and every time, and we've outlined some of those on past programs here. The dossier essay that it put out on Monday in advance of Colin Powell's Wednesday UN presentation is now a domestic scandal of its own in Britain, to the extent that it's even getting a little bit of news coverage on this side of the Atlantic for a change, but not very much.
Let's just give you the title of that report. It's called Iraq, Its Infrastructure of Concealment, Deception, and Intimidation.
Yes. And it's 19 pages, so it's a much more manageable length. And lo and behold, it turns that rather than the highly classified British intelligence sources from the very latest and most current and best knowledge that we have of the inner workings of the Saddam Hussein government, which is what this was purported to be, including by Colin Powell on global television on Wednesday, it turns out to be almost entirely a cut-and-paste job from publicly published articles previously made public in magazines and academic journals, some dating back, some of the articles have been published back as late as the mid-90s, and some of the material going back to even before the Gulf War. In particular...
No, I think the bulk of the material, the 1997 article in Jane's Intelligence Review is based on material that was old then, seized during the Gulf War.
Well, and there was also one, are you talking about the California graduate student?
No, that's a different one.
That's a different one that was in the Middle East Journal of
They pretty much plagiarized this guy's article.
Yeah, they did. And it was, they quote a verbatim from it at some points, and one of the ones that was major in particular was this California graduate student. He was a doctoral student when this article was published. He's a postdoc now, and it was an analysis of documents seized during the Gulf War of the intelligence operations in Iraq and around Iraq's neighbors in 1990 and 1991 before the Gulf War. This is the kind of stuff being presented by the Blair government as what the current threat the Iraq government poses is being, and they actually have copped to this and said, yes, this is actually where we got a lot of this stuff, but it's all true. It's still absolutely true, and it's this big scandal over there now, and it really it calls into question very much if this is the quality of information that the British have, and this is the quality of the information that that Colin Powell and the Americans are also relying upon. You know, it doesn't say very much for the strength of the case that Iraq poses a security threat to the U.S.
Okay, well, and that turned out to be one of the big pieces of info that Colin Powell worked into his presentation on Wednesday as well.
Oh,
yes,
and there was a lot of it.
You want to take
a first crack at this?
Yes, I will.
we both bought into just these lengthy lists of deconstructions.
Okay. Yes,
so.
I will. I want to unravel some of that evidence that Powell presented. Now, I can't talk about it all because there was too many allegations made in his report, but he did give a few hard pieces, what he would consider hard pieces of evidence, and I want to talk about those. First, the satellite photos. First of all, you have to understand all the sites in the satellite photos, every single one that was shown, are under monitoring by the UN currently and have been for months, and they have found nothing there that is suspect. That includes sites that Powell asserted are currently undergoing renovation and are currently storing chemical and or biological weapons.
And they've been repeatedly visited on the ground by inspectors.
Right. Those currently have UN monitoring going on, including cameras in the facilities, and they have found no such activity there. The photos themselves were blurry. They were of buildings and trucks, and they led a former weapons inspector, Jonathan Tucker, a man who specializes in chemical and biological weapons, to comment to the Washington Post that the photos appeared to have been deliberately blurred to conceal the full capabilities of U.S. spy satellites. Of course, you and I might think that more detailed photos would show that evidence would show details that don't support Colin Powell's case, and that would be the reason why they would show us blurry photos. Notably, Tucker went on to say that the quantities of chemical weapons that Powell says that Iraq possesses, about 100 to 500 tons, are not huge amounts, and, quote, it would be in the margin of significance from a military standpoint. Some of the sites that were shown were called sanitized sites. The before and after pictures that he gave are not to the same scale, so you can't really see what's been done. Some of the suspicious vehicles in at least one photo look like they are the same size and color as UN inspection vehicles. Also, there's the question of why he shows us empty cargo trucks. Why show us empty cargo trucks? Why not show us cargo trucks that are full of dirt being removed from a site? Why not show us cargo trucks that have warheads or missiles in them? Certainly, the U.S. has the capability to blanket the world with satellite coverage. And I have to admit that I think a lot of those satellites and a lot of those surveillance capability is being directed at Iraq right now. Why can't the U.S. tell us where those weapons went to, those trucks went to?
Incidentally, that security capability is, by and large, using money that was once spent on safety by NASA. But go ahead.
That's right. Why can't they show us photos of those missiles being moved? You know, why can't they? Well, because they don't have those photos.
Maybe they sold the rights to Fox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's and
it's entertainment division. Yeah.
Right. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the taped conversations. They were vague to the point of being meaningless. They have no conversations that you would expect to hear if Iraq actually had to deal with day-to-day weapons of mass destruction, which would have details and some very mundane things put together in the same conversation. Things like, take the VX canisters over to the dump site, you know, or tell the drivers not to take the labs north on Route 27 because there's a traffic jam. I mean, you would expect to hear things like that, but they had nothing like that. All they had were these very, very, very vague conversations that Colin Powell then had to torture to fit his argument.
Yeah, really, much of the presentation, I'll get to this with any time we have left over after you get through a lot of your list, was really notable for what was not in the report.
Exactly. He also talked about Iraq's nuclear ambitions. This was all old data from before the Gulf War. If you go through and look at it, it's all pre-1991. The mention of the aluminum tubes, again, was in counter to the International Atomic Energy Agency, UN monitoring experts saying that those aluminum tubes are totally unsuitable for use in nuclear centrifuges, but Colin Powell again insists that that's what they're being used for, so of course we must believe him. One of the big pieces of evidence was his discussion of mobile bioweapons labs. Now, the Washington Post had some interesting information on that. It refuted these claims, saying for one thing, Colin Powell said that his source, Iraqi defectors, in particular one Iraqi defector who had worked on the mobile bioweapons labs, said that they would start work on them on Thursday night, work on biological agents, and then finish by Friday night because the inspectors weren't going to investigate on the Muslim holy day of Friday. Now, Raymond Zelinskis, he's a microbiologist and former UN inspector, said that a 24-hour production cycle was impossible. This is a direct quote. Quote, you normally would require 36 to 48 hours just to do the fermentation. The short processing time seems suspicious to me, end quote. He also pointed out that the diagrams of the mobile labs showed no means of disposing of large quantities of highly, highly toxic waste. And he said the whole idea struck him as, quote, a bit far-fetched.
Of course, the Bush administration doesn't worry a whole lot about the disposal of toxic waste.
But that's right. But trying to get rid of toxic waste would leave traces around that UN weapons inspectors would be able to take samples from and find and be able to declare, yes, this is a dump site for biological weapons. They've found nothing like that. Also, there is no, in the diagrams, there's nothing to show you how the labs would be powered. I guess they must just run on solar power or something in some way that that U.S. satellites cannot take a picture of or show us. So that pretty much does the mobile biological weapons labs and just kind of throws them in the trash bin. But the article that I'm quoting is called Despite Defectors' Accounts, Evidence Remains Anecdotal, and it makes the point that defectors tend to exaggerate their evidence in order to gain attention, and that at least one defector that Powell made reference to, Kidir Hamza, has been completely debunked as a fraud.
Yeah. And above and beyond that, with the specific scenario that we have now, where there is likely to be a post-Saddam Hussein government in Iraq, that the United States is literally trying to recruit even as we speak, there is an enormous amount of incentive for any Iraqi defector or any Iraqi opposition leader to curry favor with the Americans right now, to tell them what they want to hear. And
exactly.
We've already seen in Guantanamo Bay when defectors or prisoners tell the Bush administration what they want to hear, the BS detectors are off, permanently glued into the off position.
That's right. And then the final bit of evidence that he presented that convinced a lot of people were his discussion of the links to Al-Qaeda. So, and I have to tell you, that in the last 2 days, just in the 2 days since Powell's presentation, I have read more than a dozen articles that quote U.S. intelligence sources, British intelligence sources, Canadian sources, German intelligence sources that all say that there is no link. And I mentioned the
Period.
German... And I mentioned the German intelligence sources because they have very fat files on Al-Qaeda and on on this guy that Colin Powell said is the head of this group in Iraq that is linked to Al-Qaeda, because they had the Hamburg cell, which is the group of people that Mohammed Atta put together to do the actual hijackings on September 11th. And German intelligence pretty much laughed at this presentation. So, and I want to just give you a couple quotes again. New York Times, quote, they said that the Kurds were puzzled by the reports of the terror camps. And they interviewed Kurds in northern Iraq about Ansar al-Islam, the group that's supposedly linked to al-Qaeda in Iraq, and the photo of the poisons training camp that Colin Powell presented on Wednesday. And here's the quote. Quote, one senior Kurdish official, a member of the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan, who is familiar with the intelligence on Ansar, said he had not heard of the laboratory Mr. Powell displayed, end quote. The second quote is as follows. The Kurds also questioned whether Mr. Powell was mistaken or had mislabeled the photograph. Kermal, the village named on the photo, is controlled by Komala Islam, Islami Kurdistan, a more moderate Islamic group. So here they're saying that the village, the little photo that Powell showed, is not even under control of Ansar al-Islam. And to go on, the Toronto Globe and Mail had a quote as well. They said that the Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the man that is supposedly linked to al-Qaeda, who is supposedly the head of the al-Qaeda cell in Iraq, they call him, quote, a little-known Palestinian who isn't even on the Federal Bureau of Investigation's most wanted list, end quote. The LA Times goes on to say, quote, lawmakers who have attended classified briefings on the camp in Kermal say that they had been stymied for months in their efforts to get an explanation for why the United States has not launched a military strike on the compound near the village of Kermal. They go on to point out that, quote, the facility is in an area where the United States already has a considerable presence, end quote. Ansar al-Islam has their territory outside of Saddam Hussein's control. It is monitored by the United States and by other Kurdish groups, and the United States has planes that fly over that northern fly zone
every
daily
day. Yeah.
And hit targets there almost every day. Why have they not bombed this so-called poisons facility? Well, because they're not sure that it's controlled by Ansar al-Islam. And here we have evidence from Kurds who do control a large part of northern Iraq that it is not under control of Ansar al-Islam. It's all bad information. Now, a lot of it comes from people who were tortured for that information, the detainees at Guantanamo Bay, and Colin Powell says this. I want to just point out that many of these detainees suffer from mental illnesses. A bunch of them, I think it's as many as 15, have tried to commit suicide, many of them more than once, and at least one of them was released recently because he was schizophrenic. So we're going on information from people who have been tortured, and many of them who are mentally ill, probably because of their captivity. And at least one high operative that Colin Powell discusses is a man being held in Pakistan and is being tortured, has also been the source of false alarms here in the United States about terror attacks in the last year.
And, you know, the fascinating thing about all this, and there's a great deal more more information. I mean, yeah. Yeah, Powell's presentation went on for a very long time, and the old truism that it takes five minutes of truth to debunk 5 seconds of lie. Well, you know, Powell had many, many, many minutes of lies, so it would take us a few hours if we really wanted to get detailed about it.
But I have one last little tidbit.
Yeah, sure, go for it.
Folks will like. Now, this man, al-Zarqawi, that Colin Powell said was the head of the al-Qaeda cell in Iraq, did have a powerful sponsor who provided him with a safe house when he was traveling to and from Afghanistan and gave him over $1 million to set up his network of operatives. Was this person Saddam Hussein or even an Iraqi person? Oh, no. No, no. This person was a member of the royal family of Qatar. His name is Abdul Karim Al Thani, and you can read about him in the New York Times in an article called "Intelligence Breaks Led U.S. to Tie Envoy Killing to Iraqi Al-Qaeda Cell." So you can find out all about how Qatar, who is our coalition partner, will be using Qatari Air Force and military bases to launch attacks on Iraq in the coming months. How Qatar has supported this man and not Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, at every step, this stuff is remarkable, and there's a number of things that I mentioned that were absent from this presentation. And just to maybe start with the large picture, what is most absent from this, even if you accepted every word of Colin Powell's presentation as gospel truth, which, you know, most of it is not, it at no point in his presentation did Colin Powell make any kind of a case that any of this information represents anything other than in the case of its quote unquote ties to Al Qaeda, that it basically operates in the same time zone as some of these folks, and in the case of the I just draw a complete blank on where I was going with that.
You were up at 4 till 4.
Yeah, that's right. I warn people.
This is the downside of your research.
Yes, exactly.
It is.
What was the other big part of Paul's presentation? This is embarrassing.
It went on for an hour and a quarter.
Well, no, you were listening to this too. There were the links to the terrorist groups and the bioweapons.
The mobile bioweapons labs.
The drawings of those mobile bioweapons labs.
Yeah. You know, there's no evidence in either of these cases that it represents an actual threat to the security of the United States. So there is no evidence that any of these threats, even if they're a threat to their neighbors, let alone a threat to the United States, isn't something that couldn't be taken care of by, for example, police and intelligence work, by the UN inspection teams, by any number of the processes that are already in place to take care of this. What the United States is still talking about is an unprovoked invasion of another country and a replacement of that country's government on the basis of a threat to the security of the United States that is basically non-existent. That's what Colin Powell is trying to make a case for. And not only is he trying to make a case for it, but he's trying to make a case for it on the basis of evidence that is largely fictitious or completely out of date.
And some of it quite ridiculous if you listen to or talk to intelligence or terrorism experts.
And so when you read that France and Russia and are countries that are, you know, still balking at the United States' insistence of war, no, they're not still balking. They're laughing openly at this because, I mean, they're also terrified because they think the Bush administration is likely to go through with it anyway, and that has terrible implications really for all of the Western countries in terms of the threat from much of the Islamic world, really. The threat that the United States poses to much of the rest of the world right now, and specifically the Bush administration, that really is the global security menace right now, not the Saddam Hussein regime.
Mm-hmm. As a Time poll they had a couple weeks ago in Europe showed that people had to choose what was the biggest threat to them, Iraq or the United States, and overwhelmingly chose the U.S.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
With that, we are unfortunately out of time this week. As we seem to run into
more
every week.
Yeah, we didn't even get into the Bush budget for 2004,
no.
Which I want to try and talk about next week. That was released on Monday, and that's a frightening document also.
Okay. talking with John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, co-editors at Eat the State. And tell us, where can we find Eat the State?
It is a volunteer publication, comes out locally every couple of weeks at bookstores and cafes, free of charge, places where you pick up free papers. And I suspect we're putting together next week's issue over this weekend, and I suspect we're going to have a lot of this detail in next week's issue.
Oh, yes.
You can also find it on the web, and for people who are listening from outside the area, because we're on the web too, you can find it at www.eatthestate.org, and you can subscribe through the mail and send donations. Also, the subscriptions are $24 for a year, $45 for two, and it's at P.O. Box 85541, Seattle, Washington, 98145. If you missed any of that, or you'd like to volunteer, have story tips, feedback, would like to tell us that we're traitors and don't appreciate all that our soldiers have done to defend the freedom of America, give a call and we'll leave it at our voicemail. It's area code 206-903-9461.